I'll be attempting to cover quite a lot of ground in this series of video posts. And I'll mention here at the beginning of this first one, the part of my approach here, of my methodology if you like, often involves me going over the same point perhaps more than once. I do this in order to present my position here from a slightly different perspective each time, in an attempt to throw more light on it. So it could be very easy for you to gain the impression here that I am repeating myself, but hopefully you should, at some point, realise that in fact I am not. Eugene Halliday died in 1987, and although he referred to himself, at least in his will, simply as an artist, fortunately for me at least, during the course of his life, he also spoke and wrote extensively across a wide range of subjects. And indeed, anyone who is interested here can easily verify this for themselves by simply visiting the Eugene Halliday archive that now contains most of this original source material in the form of freely downloadable audio and text files. For almost 40 years now, when it concerns my own relationship to Eugene Halliday at least, I have confined myself almost exclusively to dealing only with this source material. And so you should find it relatively easy to understand why I have no direct interest in who or what Eugene Halliday was biographically, unless that is, it throws some light upon my understanding of his material. Although I might offer the occasional opinion as to what it was that I thought he was doing and also perhaps why he was doing it. The posts that go up to make this blog then have, as a consequence of my position here, consisted by and large of my own various attempts at describing the where, when, why, what and how of this interaction with, or if you prefer, of my relationship to this material of Eugene Halliday's. And I should also add here that any conclusions I might have arrived at were never intended to be used by me as a means of influencing others here. There are two major concepts of Eugene Halliday's that I believe are behind everything that he wrote or spoke about. And these very quickly became for me what I would call my two primary areas of concern. These are that anyone who is intent upon seeking any in-depth understanding of themselves, something that I have for some considerable time now referred to as my authentic self, as opposed, that is, to my genuine self, must first develop what Eugene Halliday referred to as an active language. And two, all that there is sentient power. And that this sentient power is working for the development of the potential in all being. I believe that if you focus on these two aspects of his material when attempting to interact with it, then in my opinion, you will come to at least a partially correct understanding of it, but only to the degree to which you've established your own particular active language here. And if you only interact with this material via what Eugene Halliday refers to as your passive language, then even though you might even remember a great deal of it, perhaps even to the extent that you can repeat some of it almost verbatim, this will do you very little good. Indeed, in my opinion, this approach invariably results in a form of narcissism, with overtones of what used to be called, in the historical past, idolatry. By the way, I have already made available in a number of my previous postings on this blog a reasonable amount of information re my understanding of both these active and passive forms of language. That word good for Eugene Halliday was an appetital word, and its sense of it then stresses good for something. Basically, this something here would, in my view, constitute an appetite for the most efficient way of formulating sentient power. However, it must be understood here from the very beginning in all this that this formulating, which is achieved by a deliberate act of will, must only be used to aid in the development of that potential in all being. But please bear in mind that this word all here also, of course, includes you. And that's a very important point to grasp. If, on the other hand, you attempt to use this power for anything else, say, simply in order to present yourself as in the know, perhaps, you will metaphorically stop moving or stop making any progress, in my opinion. You will, in fact, probably have made things very much worse for yourself. And instead of, as it were, to use a metaphor from a child's game, climbing up that ladder, you will now find yourself sliding down that snake. I believe that an active language can only be acquired by engaging in what I refer to as working with a capital W. Working with a small W means, for example, labouring, that is, digging the garden, or inputting information on that computer in your place of work, or studying for an academic degree, making preparations for a holiday abroad, etc., etc. And so, importantly, I believe, it can be not only extremely taxing, but also extremely pleasant. And it's often no problem to engage in, even if you're wandering about all over the place while you're doing so, just so long as you get it done. Working with a capital W, on the other hand, can only ever be done reflexively in the now, and involves, at the very least, and amongst other things, striving to develop the ability to truthfully formulate, by making use of your active language, the real meaning of your view of yourself and or your present situation in the world. A view that you believe is being reflected in your consciousness in the now. I'll leave that here now for the time being. Hopefully I'll come back to it later. This post is intended to function as a brief introduction here, so I will begin at the beginning, as it were, and tell you, and yet again for those of you who have been following me here on this blog, that my initial objective when I first began constructing the Eugene Halliday Archive some 10 years ago in early 2004, some 17 to 18 years after Eugene Halliday's death, in his mid-70s that is, was simply to discover if there were others out there who had worked with some of this material of his, and who would perhaps be willing to share with me their individual experiences of attempting to incorporate their particular understanding of it into various modes of practice. And also, a question that was sometimes later to become more important for me, over the past couple of years or so anyway, just why they had done so, and why they had focused on those particular concepts. And I was also curious to discover if there were others out there who had experienced that same sense of gratitude and relief that I had when I was first introduced to this material in the mid-70s through the efforts of someone who quickly became and has remained ever since a close friend of mine. I'd spent a great deal of my life up to that point looking for answers, and Eugene Halliday was someone who definitely appeared, to me at least, to be able to supply me with further advice, and so help me to travel further in what I believe to be the right direction. A fortunate state of affairs, then, I would claim, and one that very quickly became of enormous value to me during this period of my life, and that was to last for well over a decade. As the age of the computer began to pick up pace in the early 1990s, something that I had become increasingly more involved in from the mid-1980s onwards, mainly due to the arrival of synthesised keyboards, I realised that, what shall I call it, digital file management was going to be the way in which information was going to be stored and distributed in the very near future, particularly after the arrival of email around 1993. And I think it's astonishing that the World Wide Web only began 25 years ago, in 1989. A couple of years after Eugene Halliday's death, in fact. It was actually something that Eugene Halliday didn't see coming, in much the same way that science fiction writers didn't see the mobile phone coming, and which I believe is a very important aspect in helping you to dispel any occult ideas you may have picked up about the man. In fact, what I might call his precognitive intuitions, reworld events, weren't really up to much, in my opinion. But perhaps, fortunately for me, as far as I'm concerned, these conclusions of his re-future events were of almost zero interest to me anyway. But to get back to that computer age, due entirely to what Eugene Halliday referred to as inertia, most of my generation, that is, the one born between the late 1930s and the early 1940s, would simply be left behind here. And even the generation or two born after that, between 1945 and 1975, say, would still find all of this something of a struggle, probably. But I would add here that it's interesting to note, and supremely important in all of this, in my opinion, that those born later, particularly after, say, 1990, even if they are viewed culturally or socially inferior by others, appear to have little or no such difficulty here. This is simply just the way it is. Way to go then, as they say. I was never on board with the idea that you had to be ready for this material, or that this material wasn't for everyone, or that it needed managing or distributing by others. Which I hope explains, in part at least, my hostility towards these others who do seek to do so. My sense of what this material is about, for all intents and purposes, I see it as behaving in much the same way as those seeds that are mentioned in the parable of the sower in the New Testament. That is, this material has been scattered about out there by Eugene Halliday, as a direct consequence of the work done by him. And so it is now out there for anyone else to engage in. With, who happens to either come across it for themselves, or, as in my particular case, had it suggested to them by others. And what happens after that is entirely their responsibility, entirely up to them. But most importantly here, I felt more and more that it was the direct responsibility of those who had been helped by this material to attempt to pass it on. Make it available, that is. In the way that it has been offered to them. That is, freely. Or even perhaps to invest what they could easily afford in order to get this material out there, while it still had the potential to take root. Somewhat naive of me, I suppose. Anyway, I had held off starting on this project because, in part at least, I would have preferred it had someone else taken this task on. And also because I, somewhat naively again perhaps, sincerely believed that someone else surely would. And so I kept putting it off and putting it off. But nothing had happened here by 2004, and very soon after I began, by mid-2004, in fact, it had become fairly obvious to me, if only from the hostile emails I was soon receiving as a direct consequence of my efforts here, that there had never, in fact, ever been any intention on the part of those who could have made this material freely available to all to have done so. Quite the reverse, in fact. Indeed, they didn't appear to have the vaguest appreciation of what it was that I was attempting to do. So much so that I even found myself being accused from time to time, by some of these people at least, of possessing all sorts of bizarre and ulterior motives here. A situation that I not only found extremely disappointing, but also very interesting. If only because of what it was that I genuinely believed Eugene Halliday, and historically, people like him were, and rather obviously in my view, really all about. I would claim that my motive for my actions here since 2004 are now surely blatantly obvious to anyone who's remotely interested, that is. So much so that my restating of them here yet again has probably been unnecessary. For myself then, my motive for wanting to establish this archive was, I believe then and still believe now, self-explanatory almost. In that I simply wanted to hear from people who were prepared to discuss their own particular experiences when attempting to prove for themselves the practicality, and please note that this doesn't necessarily mean the truth of, but has far more to do with a belief in, Eugene Halliday's various ideas on, for instance, what he refers to as ancestral influence, or perhaps field consciousness, or any of his other major concepts for that matter. And by their own particular experiences, I mean just that. And not, for instance, that, in their opinion, someone or other, in the remote historical past, say, in some completely different culture, had put forward ideas that seemed to them to be saying the same thing that Eugene Halliday had said or written of in the recent historical past. If we choose to view both of these sets of ideas from some particular biased viewpoint, that is. Although I will quickly add here that I have no problem at all with anyone presenting results that are based on serious, in-depth and disciplined research, as opposed to, say, something supported by a couple of articles in some newspaper or other that has taken their eye, or some monthly populist magazine, or the occasional high-end documentary on BBC TV. To put that perspective of mine in a little more, to put that position of mine in a little more perspective for you now, the overwhelming majority of those I have met here would have stood little chance of passing a GCSE O-level exam if they lived in the UK, or reached high-level diploma level if they lived in the USA, in a subject such as physics or mathematics. But we're still quite prepared to give out their various opinions on what it is that, say, quantum mechanics is really all about. Which is harmless, I suppose. Until it comes to something like their opinions regarding, say, vaccinating young children, when, in my opinion, I believe that they can become positively dangerous. And particularly so in this case, to save our vulnerable young mothers. But if you have a grasp on a subject that the average well-informed, intelligent 15 to 16-year-old has, never mind any understanding of this stuff at undergraduate level, why on earth would you sound off about it? Fortunately, it's very easy for all of us to at least check our level of understanding here. Because we can simply buy a book of old test papers, or even access these online, and see how we do. And if we find that we're struggling with information that many 15-year-olds are finding relatively easy to deal with, even if it's somewhat boring to them, then perhaps we should take the time to consider whether or not we should remain silent here. We could perhaps, if we were really interested in these subjects, spend some time boning up on a particular one, say, mathematics or comparative religion, by, say, attending night school courses. A very ordinary thing to do, but not so glamorous and esoteric as joining, say, a witch's coven, I suppose. But as a result, we could then at least claim that we've become informed here, even if it was only at a basic level. Practical involvement essentially here initially then, and opinions about only afterwards. And opinions that ideally have only arisen primarily as a direct consequence of this praxis. And I must say, from 2004 up until the present, I've always thought that this was a reasonably easy request of mine for anyone of average intelligence to understand. You're interested in Eugene Halliday's ideas? So am I. Have you ever involved any of these ideas of his in your life? Tried them out, so to speak? And if you did, then which particular ideas were these? And what subsequently happened to you as a consequence? That all seems to me to be very straightforward. But I have to tell you that the silence here over the past 10 years or so has been deafening. Although, as I think I've already implied here, there were any number of people who were prepared to give me their 5 minutes worth of input on matters such as the nature of consciousness, life after death, reincarnation, UFOs, what they imagined the ancient Egyptians were up to, the spiritual value of pleasant aromas, the secret life of trees, indigo children, the imagined benefits of some tarted up version of a physical exercise that was now being peddled to the general public as something called, well, pick yourself an Indian sounding word and just then add the word yoga after it. Or the benefits of one diet over another, etc., etc., etc. I have to say that this state of affairs was, and still is, I suppose, mildly depressing for me. And I will also admit that I was in denial here for a very long time, that I wasn't meeting the right people. Because to present yourself as being involved with someone, and so in the know then, as it were, who can be heard on over 300 hours of recorded talks, and who has written well over 500,000 words that are still available, would, I maintain, mean that you had more than just a passing acquaintance with one or two at least of Eugene Halliday's major concepts. My relationship to Eugene Halliday's ideas, that is, to my various attempts at interacting with them, an activity of mine that I refer to as working with them, has always been an intensely personal one for me. And it was also not one where I ever felt any need to form some form or other of consensus either. Excuse me. I am also very well aware that one of the major pitfalls in engaging with others in an area of research such as this is the mutual construction of consensus realities, where the rule here seems to be, I won't show you mine just as long as you don't show me yours. You can add to this the problem of the formation of a personality cult, a feature that almost invariably seems to spring up around people such as Eugene Halliday, where in personal meetings with him are later described as sitting at the feet of, or that a number of polite conversations, or even of therapy sessions with him somehow metamorphose in their subsequent retelling into accounts of a reciprocal or even deep and mutual friendship. But even though I have over the years become a little selective in who it is that I'm prepared to discuss this material with, and even though I do claim here that my interactions with his ideas are intensely personal, I wouldn't say that they were private. And in fact, I've been discussing these interactions of mine at great length with at least one or two people for decades now. I've only ever been really interested in what I believe was Eugene Halliday's major activity, which I see as his attempt to use every opportunity he was capable of using in order to work, and that he did so by viewing all that potentially was, all that was actually presented to him, or that he created himself, as an aspect of what he termed sentient power, and further, that this sentient power was, quote, actively working for the development of potential in all being. Please note, however, this does not mean, for me, that this sentient power somehow only ever manifests as lovey-dovey or something along those lines. The real presence of evil in the world is, in my opinion, an obvious refutation of this idea, and the results of this evil in the world is something that can affect any one of us in very dramatic and often horrendous ways. One only needs to think of the events of the Second World War here. As far as any attempt at working is concerned, though, the only problem with evil that you will face, in my opinion, is the possibility that you will be seduced by it as a direct consequence of the power that will certainly arise in you from engaging in this activity of working. And this is far more serious and a far more likely consequence here. And before you start protesting, let me assure you that in my opinion, you almost certainly will be seduced here. And so your problem is then, from my perspective here, simply the degree to which you will have become so. And so then I suppose I could be accused of appearing to be mounting some sort of defence of the devil here. Well, be that as it may. This viewpoint of mine is, I would claim, a relatively easy one to come by, or to at least appreciate, if you have taken the trouble to engage with Eugene Halliday's various and extremely well-presented ideas on this subject, in any depth, that is. To return to my interest in Eugene Halliday's ideas here. On the other hand, I have little or only a passing interest in, for example, his psychotherapeutic activities with others, or in his in-depth views of what it is that constitutes the typographical and topological features of what I would refer to as the psyche. I've always viewed Eugene Halliday as a remarkable human being, though. And I deliberately use the word remarkable here, a term that was originally suggested to me by that close friend of mine I mentioned before, a long time ago, because it expresses my view of Eugene Halliday very nicely. It means worthy of a second look, that's all. And not something ridiculously extravagant, such as the light of my life, or a real father figure to me, or anything like that. I have never attempted to present any sort of sycophantic endorsement of the man here either. That is, I have never treated Eugene Halliday or his ideas as somehow deserving of any deferential treatment. And indeed, I prefer to believe that he did not require anyone to behave towards either himself or these ideas of his in this way. In my opinion, in the end, I would say that if he required anything from others at all, it was simply that they try out the consequences of embodying these ideas for themselves just to see what happens. And then perhaps, if they're able to do so, that is, to construct some form of a text about these experiences of theirs, and perhaps to subsequently go on to relate these texts to other interested parties. The central overriding purpose of this working, then, as I see it, that would be to come to know myself by working in order to develop the potential in my own being. And indeed, much of the time, what I was doing here, when I did eventually start, at least as far as others were concerned, probably seemed to be a bit pointless and downright weird or even crazy to them. But even so, I do still believe that the way I see working is something that most people could at least make an attempt at, in principle certainly. And this is the very special advantage that in order to begin here, you don't need to belong to any special secretive elite club or select group, or involve yourself in any unnecessary studying or memorising of so-called sacred texts either. However, what you do essentially, crucially need to develop, as much as you are able to do, that is the ability not to lie to yourself about yourself. And this is, I believe, to indirectly quote Eugene Halliday here, something that is, in principle, very, very simple to do. But, as you will soon discover, this does not mean that it is very, very easy to do at all. In fact, in my opinion, it would probably be far, far easier for me to have joined one of those exclusive societies or practice memorising quotes from the Bible, etc., etc. The number of people who actually attempt to do this working, well, what do you think in your experience? Here's an easier way of phrasing that question, perhaps. What percentage of the people that you meet regularly pronounce on what it is as others, often from cultures that they obviously barely understand, should or should not be doing with their lives? Or pass opinions on what it is that they imagine others have done or think? And what percentage of people do you meet who seem to be seriously attempting to understand themselves, without, that is, obsessing with themselves? Radically, at least from my perspective here, any question or any interest in this material that does not arise as a consequence of this attempt to know oneself will be, at the very best, simply a pleasant waste of time. One of the real problems for me here in writing this blog, as I see it, has been the necessity from time to time for me to comment on what others are doing who are clearly attempting to make use of Eugene Halliday's name in one way or another, either on the internet or at various centres, etc., in order to advance their own opinions here, who are offering what to me are merely their own intellectual interpretations of what it was that Eugene Halliday was about. Perhaps the most troubling of these for me is the fancied yoga connection that many out there appear to believe exists. And I must make it clear before I go on here that I have absolutely nothing whatsoever against the practice of any form of yoga per se. However, after extensive research, I've been unable to locate any evidence whatsoever to support the idea that Eugene Halliday ever presided over what any reasonable person would call a yoga session. Indeed, it is surely curious, at least, that Eugene Halliday never once set foot during the 15 plus years when he could very easily have done so in Tanny Garth, a large house in North Wales that Ken Radcliffe, an early associate of Eugene Halliday's, moved into during the early 1970s, sometime after his self-appointment as a yoga teacher during the 1960s, which was that period when he was organising groups in Liverpool, at which Eugene Halliday was both a regular speaker and clearly the major and only source, really, of inspiration there. Eugene Halliday did, in fact, write a series of meditative exercises for this group, the International Hermeneutic Society, or IHS as it was known, during this time. But these were very clearly not what anyone who was around, at least during that time, the swinging 60s, would have recognised as yoga exercises. What I can tell you for certain, though, because I took part in them, was that Eugene Halliday did devise, during his later period at Parklands, a particular collective exercise for those wishing to work together, and that this exercise was very heavily biased towards the examination of language, both written and spoken, and also on the foundational meaning of any sounds that might have been uttered during any particular session here. Also, the meaning of any significant improvised movements that were engaged in by those taking part in these sessions, jumping, walking, crawling, or the touching of one another in various ways, striking or embracing. But nothing remotely like exercises or postures at all. And let me be clear here and also add, there's a great deal of talking, a great deal of mutual discussion also went on during the course of these sessions. Sessions that sought to deal directly with what it was that was being dynamically experienced in the now. I should also add here that it was deliberately intended by Eugene Halliday that these sessions be either exclusively male only or female only. No mixed groups then. I'll leave this brief description for now, because these sessions involved an extremely complex initial scenario, and those taking part were required to internalise a great deal of specific information before they could claim that this exercise was of any use to any particular individual taking part here. At least, that is, I believe, in the way that Eugene Halliday intended it to be. And to really go any further here in any detail, I believe, that would be required would take me a great deal of time. If, though, activity like this does form the basis of what it is that any yoga teacher of yours who is claiming that they are carrying on the teaching of Eugene Halliday or something like that are practicing, then I would agree that this would, initially at least, indicate that what you're doing is connected, if only perhaps tenuously, to what it was that Eugene Halliday and later David Marlowe was doing. Of course, it might be the case that whatever yoga teachers are actually doing is uniquely different and perhaps even better, more effective somehow. But that is not the point here that I'm trying to make, which directly concerns the appropriation of Eugene Halliday's name to validate some group of ideas or activities, and making no attempt to justify that appropriation, except for making vague statements along the lines that those in charge here have studied at the feet of the master, which I very much doubt, or have been working with his ideas for years, which I also very much doubt, or carrying out his instructions, etc., etc. What I'm not attempting to do then, here in this blog, is teach or inform others about what it was that Eugene Halliday was about. That's for them to formulate for themselves. What I am primarily attempting to do is describe and justify as much as I am able, give my reasons for, that is, and my perceived consequences of, if you will, my interaction with what I believe Eugene Halliday was about. For my part here then, I will be offering my experiences here as constitutive of good advice, if I can possibly avoid doing so. Rather, I'll just be attempting to focus on relating how this experience of involving myself with this material seemed to play itself out for me. And you will then have to decide for yourself if my account of what I claim is this effort of mine has been of any real use to you. And by the way, this doesn't necessarily mean that you found it interesting or anything like that. I do hope that these brief examples that I have given you in this first video have given you an introduction, or at least some idea, for the time being at least, of a couple of the threads here that I have followed in my attempts to work with Eugene Halliday's concepts. And if you only take one thing away with you here, then I hope it will be that I have managed to convince you that I believe Eugene Halliday's work is of real help when it comes to working on yourself. That the material he produced was freely given, and that engaging with it yourself will do nothing to diminish the power of it or you. Quite the reverse, in fact. To be, hopefully, continued.